We are going to start. I hope that some people can be adding to the meeting. Thank you very much for everybody for coming to this panel discussion in this very busy day and very busy lunchtime for everybody. We have so many meetings at the UN that sometimes we can explain the difficulty to be here. We are going to talk about the proposal to declare 2015 an International Year of Light and Light-Based Technologies for Development. As you are aware, a decision proposing an International Year of Light in 2015, introduced by Ghana, Mexico, New Zealand, and the Russian Federation, was adopted by the Executive Board of UNESCO at its last session in October 2012. The resolution was co-sponsored by additional 30 member states. Based on that broad support and on merits on this initiative, is that we are proposing that the UN as a whole declare 2015 as International Year of Light and Light-Based Technologies for Development. Some of the aims of these initiatives are to increase public awareness on how light, science, and technology influence people's everyday lives, and to foster lasting international cooperation between governments, industry, academia, and other relevant stakeholders, innovative partnerships that can last and help in countries and individual development and well-being. The true value of this initiative is to apply the convening potential of the UN to bring together all relevant stakeholders and effectively articulate local or regional initiatives around the world. It also stimulates partnerships and novel forms of financing. It is, in effect, an example or true synergy. This event is an example also of such synergy we have with us prominent scientists and specialists from many different fields that are relevant to the initiative: fundamental science and technology, science in developing countries, interaction with industry, education and public outreach, and multidisciplinary approaches that are the issues that we are going to talk about today. The panelists will describe the science underlying light-based technologies and provide clear examples of the application of the potential social, economic, and environmental benefits of these technologies in the context of an international year. The day will also give us an overview of the timeline, aim, and activities envisaged in an international year on light. I am sure we will have a very interesting meeting. Thank you very much again, everybody, for coming. And now I will give the floor to the director of UNESCO in New York, Mr. Philip Kridelka. Mr. Kridelka, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Madam Ambassador. And welcome to all of you. I will try not to speak too long so that my colleagues and friends here, the scientists, who are the important people around the table, will be able to express concretely what they are doing and inform you and have this dialogue with you. I just wanted to say quickly that there are three main reasons for which UNESCO is very proud to be the co-organizer of this event today. The first one is to sit here with you, Madam Ambassador, and with your country. I would like to say here that Mexico is an extremely important partner for UNESCO, and we do appreciate all the political and financial support that we receive from your country for our programs on education, culture, science, social sciences. The head of the social sciences sector at UNESCO is Dr. Álvarez Lasso. She's from Mexico, and also on press freedom and the training of journalists. The second reason is that an event like this one allows us at UNESCO to underline the role that we play in this topic of interface between scientists, science, and policymakers. And that is something that is extremely needed and important in the world today when we talk about harnessing globalization, of improving public policies towards sustainable development. There's a lot of politicians talk with each other. There are many opportunities where scientists speak with each other, civil society speaks with each other, business circles talk with each other. But to have everybody around the table exchanging good practices or suggestions or ideas, especially scientists being listened by policymakers, is something that does not happen that often. And UNESCO is proud of our record in that regard. We have a strong political legitimacy, as you know. We have more member states than the UN here in New York. And we do have successful programs. Ocean is an example. Last year, We had a meeting with the American Undersecretary in charge of oceans, Dr. Lubchenco, who told us how America appreciates our program where we allow American researchers and scientists from all over the world to meet with policymakers in that highly sensitive topic, which is oceans. And there is a real cooperation there and fresh ideas and good policies that can be identified and sometimes implemented somewhere else in the world. We do the same with heritage. You know that we have this World Heritage Convention, and it is also a tool so that policymakers, people who are in charge of management of heritage, can talk with the specialists of heritage so that compromises, efficient policies can be identified that allow, of course, political development and jobs for the population, but also the preservation of heritage. And that problem is a global problem. In all our countries, we are proud of our natural or historical heritage, and there are also the imperatives of growth and employment and creating jobs for the local communities. And this dialogue between scientists, in this case architects and the specialists of heritage management, and the policymakers is important. And we have similar problems, programs in hydrology, and the Secretary General has now tasked UNESCO after the meeting in Rio to suggest to him also a sort of general interface, science policy on sustainable development. And we are now working to identify a group of scientists, all disciplines, where the United Nations and Mr. Ban Ki-moon himself could draw and could ask the expertise in order to give some light and some information to prepare further meetings at the UN level on sustainable development. So the first reason for which I'm happy is to sit next to you, Ambassador Morgan, and to work and to organize this meeting with Mexico. The second one is that gives me the opportunity to underline the importance that you have yourself mentioned of this science policy interface. And the third one, as you had said as well, is because this meeting is also a way for us to advocate for this International Year of Light. You have mentioned that our executive board, with the strong support of Russia, Ghana, New Zealand, Mexico, has adopted in October, and 28 other countries have adopted in October, a resolution in that sense. And of course, a decision by UNESCO is important, but a decision here in New York, in the capital of the United Nations, is politically much, much heavier. And we are convinced at UNESCO that having an International Year of Light would have three major merits. It would help all actors in that field to cooperate better, to start with within the UN system. All UN agencies who are working with it could perhaps find new synergies, as you said, Ambassador Morgan, private sector, civil society, the researchers, the policymakers. The second reason is that such an international year is an excellent tool for all of us to raise the public awareness in the world to the importance of light-based technologies, and the potential of light-based technologies for science, but for human well-being and for sustainable development, for communication, for health, for solar energy, for education, for agriculture, for cultural heritage, and so many fields. And the third reason is that we are also confident that if the member states were to take the decision to approve this International Year of Light, it would also offer us one more tool to develop the exchange of technologies between the North and the South, between the East and the West, in that field of light technologies. And we do know that this requires heavy investments, and that developing nations also hope that the UN will facilitate this access to technology and those exchange of technology and good practices in that field. So once again, thank you very much for giving us this opportunity to be here. And my colleague, Dr. Persic, and myself, we are really looking forward to listen to your wise comments. Thank you very much.
Thanks to you for your comments, Mr. Krydelka. As I said to you, we have a very interesting panel. The first speaker will be Dr. John Dudley, President of the European Physical Society, representing the International Year of Light Steering Committee. Mr. Dudley, you have the floor, and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Ambassador, Monsieur Directeur. I'd like to begin just by thanking you all for the opportunity that you've given us today to be here in New York and to explain and to share with you our knowledge and our passion for this project and for the subject of light and its applications in technology, and to explain to you our view on what it can do for the objectives of UNESCO and the United Nations in general. The International Year of Light is a project that began in 2009 amongst scientists. It's a bottom-up, community-driven initiative to bring to the world knowledge and knowledge of the different applications and the potential applications of light. It's multidisciplinary. It involves synergy between multiple partners. We have over 100 members of the scientific community from over 85 countries who have signed on to the mission to explain the International Year of Light. One of the main issues which has motivated us is the fact that while scientists are aware of what light does and what role it plays in technology and development, we do a very bad job at explaining the relevance of that to the wider community, the public, and other stakeholders. And yet these technologies improve the quality of life for everyone. There are applications in healthcare, applications in telecommunications. Photonics is a driver of the economy, of the world economy. Solar power helps in environment and sustainability. And every time we use a mobile phone, we're building on around 10 different aspects of photonic technology without any of us realizing it. And that's a remarkable combination of processes. And it's all driven by one aspect of science, which is light. The 21st century is referred to by scientists as the century of light, in the way that the 20th century was referred to as the century of electronics. But that knowledge is not widely known. And we would like to request the proclamation of an International Year of Light to ensure that the importance of this area of science and its applications are appreciated by everyone and not just a collection of scientists. So this is a collection of logos of all the partners. They span a wide number of professional scientific associations from all areas of the globe. They also include a number of scientific unions and umbrella organizations, such as the International Council of Science and the International Commission of Optics. So they're from all over, north, south, east, and west. The problem with scientists is that we tend to work in an environment of competition amongst ourselves. We all want to be first and best with what we do. And the same can be said about a lot of the scientific organizations that structure our field. Virtually all of these organizations participate and have initiatives in outreach and education, but they're all carried out in an independent way. They're carried out without any coordination whatsoever, and I think there's a lot of duplication of effort and a waste of resources and time. And the declaration of an international year by the United Nations is an instrument, it's an opportunity to coordinate these activities together for the future, to create a new community of scientists who work together on education on a global scale instead of working in competition with each other. And the structure which we've proposed is around main themes in science, technology, the use of the visual aspect of light in nature to motivate education and young people to look around and see the opportunities of science, and also culture. And as well as this, there are cross-cutting themes in sustainability, development, education, history of science, philosophy of science, and youth, and so forth. The planning, as I mentioned, began from a bottom-up initiative in 2009, and the first committee was formed in 2010. So once you form a committee, you start to get serious about things, I guess. And surprisingly, we've managed to maintain enthusiasm at the same time as having committees, and that's not always the case either. The community of light scientists is made up of a lot of engineers as well as physicists. And engineers are very pragmatic. And the first question we asked ourselves is, how much is this going to cost? And who's going to pay for it? And we did some sums, and we realized that between us, we already have an uncoordinated budget of about $5 million, which is spent every year on outreach. But it's, I don't think we really see the return on that investment, because we're not doing it in the right way. And so what we would like to do is to coordinate this pool of resources in an intelligent way, with your help and advice based on the UNESCO experience, as well as leveraging additional resources from industry. And I just got news today that the Horizon 2020 program in Europe is already anticipating a call in 2014 for outreach activities based on their preliminary knowledge of what happened at the UNESCO Executive Board last year in the area of photonics. We're planning a coordinating secretariat at ICTP in Trieste, which is a UNESCO institute, and we're hoping that with this structure we will develop the community that will work well beyond 2015 in this field. We have got an organizational structure. These charts are not especially interesting, so I'll just pass over it, but we have thought about this, and the main point that I'd like to illustrate is that we have two-way arrows between the people on the ground doing the work and the organizational aspect. So we want information flow both ways. The reason to focus on 2015 is because it is a convergence of a remarkable series of anniversaries in science. The first textbook in optics was written in five volumes around 1015 in Arabia by Ibn al-Haytham, who's a very famous Arabic scientist. In 1815, there was insight into the nature of light in terms of a wave. In 1865, the British scientist Maxwell developed the theory of electromagnetic radiation, without which a mobile telephone would not work. In 1915, Einstein worked on general relativity, which underpins the operation of the GPS. Without the correction due to that theory, GPS would not be accurate. Nikola Tesla did his work in New York, a Serbian-American scientist, applying electromagnetic theory practically. Tesla is responsible for the fact that we have alternating current coming out of these two plugs. It was his discoveries that led to the practical application of electricity in the early 1900s. And in 1965 at Murray Hill in New York, which is a mile or so away from this building, the evidence of the Big Bang in cosmology was discovered through measurements of radiation, a very weak form of light coming from outer space. The light is an inclusive discipline. The scientists in the preceding slide come from all epochs of time and all different continents of the world, and we have thought about giving light a visual identity, and the current choice of logo is a very nice one, I think. It involves the sun, which is at the center of life. Without photosynthesis, nothing would exist on Earth. But it's also a symbol of universality and culture. The flags traveling around the sun illustrates international inclusiveness, and the different colors represent the spectrum, the scientific applications of light, and the fact that color and art is such a useful way to motivate education in science. So that's the conclusion of the introduction, providing the general background. Before handing over to the chair, I should probably say that we're all, the speakers following me, we're all university academics, and we're quite used to being interrupted and contradicted and interrogated. So if you prefer a more interactive approach to questions and answers, we're perfectly happy to have that rather than just a lecture format. So thank you very much, Madam Ambassador.
Thank you very much for your very interesting presentation. I think we can continue the presentation and then to have the interactive phase with the questions and answers. I want to introduce Dr. Anthony Johnson from the Center of Advanced Studies in Photonics and the International Center for Theoretical Physics, representing the International Year of Light Advisory Board. You have the floor, Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Ambassador. And also thank you, Secretary. It's a real pleasure to be here and to actually support this effort for the International Year of Light. Let me say a few things about the activities so far that we are participating in and hope to expand upon. And as you can see, there are a number of topics, the origins of light, and this represents photosynthesis, which of course is critical to life. We have a number of applications and communications and the global positioning systems that all depend on light. And the universe, this represents the Hubble telescope, which we've learned a lot about our universe by as a result of that. This is an example of using lasers for cataract surgery, which is a fairly new and has made major progress in these areas. Next, so I can keep on time. But I think one of the things that we want to say is that this light is more than the science and technology. There are issues where light is useful and has been expressed in culture. For example, this is a fine stained glass window from Ghana, and you can see just how beautiful this structure is. And what underlies it is also related to light. We have here the examples of the rainbow. We have halos. We have shadows. All of these things represent light, but represent some of the artistic natures. Here's an example of a beautiful sunset. Light can also be used to, and lasers in particular, to correct some of our antiquities. Some of our old paintings have actually been very carefully and meticulously brought back to life by using lasers, which of course can be focused to a very small point and allows us to actually remove damage and aging. What we show here is that at the desk is a prospectus that was developed with the support of UNESCO about what has been done, or summarizing some of the issues in the International Year of Light, what's been done in the field of light and lasers and optics over the years. And this includes some public lectures on the history of science, public lectures on light and art, and hands-on education. This is, you'll see a little bit about this later, but going into the schools and discussing lasers and optics and light. All of these things we find to be very exciting to young students once they can handle and understand what's going on. This has prompted many students to get interested in science and going on to careers in science, and we clearly need that. And photography, many, many applications of light. And I strongly urge you to take this prospectus and get a feel for what we are doing and what we would propose to do. Now, this is something I'm very proud of, and that is I've had a very long association with the International Center for Theoretical Physics, this ICTP in Trieste, Italy. My first visit there was in 1988, and I had the pleasure of meeting Nobel Prize-winning Pakistani physicist Abdus Salam, who the center is named after and who is the first and founding director of the center. And it was what a pleasure to meet him and to see his vision for how to basically get information and spread it to the developing world. And so this center in Trieste has existing for quite a while and has lectures. This is an example of one of the winter schools that has been developed there, that was developed in the mid-80s. And so this is a winter school of optics. And this is in the year 2012. And this was a lecture here, and we have many of the participants. Typically, somewhere between 60 and 90 students and sometimes faculty from the developing world come to Trieste and they hear lectures. But they're also giving lectures. This is a wonderful exchange where they hear major scientists from the developing world, but we also hear from the folks from the developing world and the technological assignments. So we're hearing developed and non-developed. And so this is an example of an optics meeting there, which we had quite a few students. And another issue that UNESCO is deeply involved in is the active learning in optics and photonics called ALUP. And so here we make visits around the globe and provide materials to get students interested in optics and photonics. And so this will be coordinated activity. We hope to expand this much further by having the International Year of Light. And here is an example of one of the instruments that we have been using to actually spread this knowledge and interest. And this is called the optics suitcase. And I actually have one right here, which we take around. And I put on everyone's desk one of the experiments that we showed the students. And each of these students is actually holding, this is a diffraction grating. And what you do is you take this small flashlight and you look at it. Now, this is just a flashlight, not a laser. And you'll see that white light is composed of the various colors of the rainbow. And so this grating, which acts sort of also like a prism that we may have been more familiar with from our education, breaks up the white light into its various colors. Now, this is even though this is a fairly simple structure, it is made, you have this piece of paper, it is made by these small bumps on a transparent material. Now, each one of these bumps is about a micron in diameter. And for to give you an idea of how small that is, one of our hair follicles is typically 50 microns. And that's why you can't see the structure. Now, also think about your compact discs. You notice how they look like a rainbow when you look at them under the white light? Well, they are actually made of structures that look like this. Each one of these bumps has information that one uses for a compact disc, so it's a very similar structure. So I welcome you're welcome to take those with you, but this is one of the things you can see the excitement on the children's face. And now, so this is a school in Ghana. Let me visit it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Johnson, for the very interesting presentation. Now, it's a pleasure to give the floor to Dr. Jan Chembo, expert in optical physics representing the African Physical Society. You have the floor, Dr. Chembo.
Thank you very much, Madam Ambassador, Mr. Director. It's a pleasure for me to be here and to give the perspective of the African Physical Society in relation with this event, extremely important event. Please. The first point I would like to emphasize, because for us it's extremely important, is that this International Year of Light will be an extremely important event in terms of networking. In this map, for example, you can see the various parts of a network. These are people that are organized around the topics of optics, student chapters, professionals that are gathered in associations and work together and collaborate together to exchange information and to improve their skills. And in this map, you can see that there are very few spots in Africa. This is one of our main problems in the African Physical Society. We are actually looking for much more networking, much more opportunities to collaborate between ourselves, but also with other scientists in the world. And we are convinced that this International Year of Light in 2015 will be an extremely important mechanism to strengthen the collaboration between African scientists working in the topic of light, the area of light technology, and other scientists around the world. And it is a coincidence that I'm here sitting with Professor Johnson, but the very first international conference that I attended, that was in 01, I think, was co-organized by him. So he went from America to organize a conference in Benin, and then I was a young PhD student in Cameroon, and I attended the conference. It was my very first international conference. And the second one was in ICTP, that he's also representing here. And after that, I've been able to go, you know, in Europe and in Spain to have another PhD, and I've worked in the U.S. and in Europe. But one of the very important points I would like to stress here is what we would like to do is to use the training capacities that has been talking a few minutes ago to strengthen the optics networks in Africa. For us, this is something that is extremely important. And still talking about training, this is actually for Africa in particular, but for the developing world also, a very, very important point. Here in this map, you can see that if you, this of course is the map of Europe, and you can see that Europe has this capacity in terms of optical fiber transmission. Basically, what it is when you write an email or make a phone call, what occurs is that the information is translated into light pulses that travel into a fiber pipe like this. This is an optical fiber. So this is basically what's going on. And then the communication capacity of a country or a continent is, in fact, maximized by these fibers, and you have information that is flowing through. And to give you an idea of how impressive this technology is, all the people that are having a phone conversation in this world at this moment, all these conversations can be passed through only one of these fibers. All the people on Earth that are having phone conversations right now can be only one optical fiber can be used to convey that. So imagine the information capacity of something like this. So right now, for example, in Europe, you can see that the information capacity, the unit is not important, but what you can see is that the gap between Europe, for example, and Africa is a factor 100. It means that Europe has a 100 much more capacity transfer and to convey information than Africa. And right now in Africa, the politicians, the policymakers are starting to tackle this problem. And telecommunications right now in Africa has bypassed oil industry in terms of importance. The number one economy in Africa today is communications, telecommunications. And if I take the case of my own country, the biggest project right now, my country is Cameroon, the biggest project right now is an optical fiber communication, so to build a network made of these optical fibers, and it is expected to double the wealth of the country in the next 15 years. This is just to give you the importance of this. And the problem now that we're facing is the problem of training. Is we have these extremely important projects, everybody is very excited about it, but we have very, very few people in Africa that have the training to manage all these networks. And an event like this one, the International Year of Light, is extremely important in the sense that it will enable to create a dynamics, a synergy that will enable all the policymakers in Africa and the scientists in Africa and, of course, all around the world to collaborate around these topics. And beyond optical communications, you also have a lot of other applications. This is the first one here is a UV lamp that is used to purify water. You know, the access to water in Africa is still a big issue, and how to obtain drinkable pure water is very extremely important recurrent problem we have. And here you can see, for example, that we like technology, we can have a very simple, compact, robust solution to provide drinkable water for people, particularly in rural areas. Second big problem of Africa is energy, and Africa, as you know, is a very sunny continent, and of course solar energy is one of the best and most affordable solution that we can investigate in order to provide energy to people. Here, for example, I have here a lamp that is powered by solar energy. And here you can see, for example, the power you have here, that kind of things. What we want to do, what is actually possible to do, is to scale it up and to fuel it during the day. So with daytime, you have the solar energy, and during the night this can give light to people. So these are kind of projects that we would like to strengthen to give a framework for it so that it becomes real for people in Africa. And of course you also have other applications. Down here you have applications in medicine, particularly for healthcare and diagnosis. Here you have, for example, sorry, John, I don't want to shine your height. Thank you. Okay, so here you, for example, you have a smartphone that you can use, for example, to diagnose some illnesses and identify some germs. So this is what I had to say from the perspective of the African Physical Society. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Chembo, for your presentation and from the African perspective, and how it will be very helpful to have this year, 2015. Now I give the floor to Dr. Philip Stoll from NASA. I know in English say NASA.
NASA.
Representing the International Year of Light Advisory Board. You have the floor, Dr. Stoll.
Thank you very much, Madam Ambassador. I think it's very appropriate that Mexico is sort of leading this meeting in that Mexico hosted the last General Congress of the International Commission of Optics in Puebla, Mexico in 2011 when I was on the vice president of the Bureau for the International Commission of Optics and had a wonderful time in Puebla. And thank you, Mr. Director. And before I speak with you on behalf of optics as a scientist and an engineer, I'll say as a proud papa, as a proud father, my second son was in that picture of the students at the International College. Oh, okay, so. You know, toss me over the light. The Who's got the pointer? Yes. So there he is right there, yeah. And he's also a swing dancer, and he spent at the festival dancing with all the ladies that were there. This is myself. Okay, so... International education, why light and optics? 50 years ago, light was at, you know, this discipline of light and light-based technology was sort of at its infancy. We had just invented the laser a couple years earlier. Optics and light technology was a negligible part of the world economy. It was a bit of a hobby. The biggest industry at the time was probably the photography industry with Kodak cameras and film. And today we have all these digital. There's about four or five digital cameras working in the room right now. Everybody's smartphone has a digital camera. And optics is fundamental. Light and light technology today, 50 years later, is accounting for 20 to 30% of the total world economy. Okay? It is the foundation upon which 20 to 30% of the total world economy is built. You don't go out and buy light. You don't go out and buy light technology, but you buy electronics, and electronics are made with light. Photons make electronics through the microlithography process. When you go to the doctor and you have a CAT scan, you have an X-ray. This smartphone has the ability, there's an app on here that will take your pulse using light. It's enabling. It's, as Yanni talked about, it's the internet. Is that light and light technology is enabling. And I cannot imagine what 50 years in the future our world economy is going to look like. Based upon light and light technology. But just imagine, in 10 to 15 years, we'll reach the point where a kilowatt of electricity generated by solar electric is equal to a kilowatt of electricity based upon coal. What will it mean to the world economy if we no longer need coal-fired plants? What will it mean to a sustainable economy, a sustainable environment, if we no longer need to burn fossil fuels, energy stored from light for millions of years or billions of years, that we can turn the light we receive onto the planet today into all the energy we need. Some global projects, we talked a couple. This little picture here on the right is an add-on to a smartphone. And what is it? It's a little spectroscopic, just like those diffraction gratings you saw. And with that, a little $5 add-on, everybody around the world could measure their air pollution, and we could monitor air pollution on a daily basis and produce worldwide maps of air pollution at the ground. Virtual museums of the world, imaging of museums and museum contents. The director was talking about communication between scientists. This is an example of communication between scientists that might not normally talk with each other. This is a project that is across the entire Middle East, Israel, Pakistan, Palestine, United Arab Emirates. It's a scientific experiment to create a synchrotron light. And with regards to the economy, the professional societies represented here in over the 100 partners, we have thousands of corporate members, and we have tens of thousands of companies, small entrepreneurs, mom-and-pop shops, all the way up to large companies like Bell Labs and Intel and Google. Google uses literally billions of lasers. You wouldn't think it, but they do. A call center has hundreds of millions of lasers in it for the Internet. And so we have some of the largest meetings. I think the photographs there at the bottom might be related to the Photonics West Conference, and there's 20,000 light-related technologists attend that meeting and exhibit at that meeting and come to learn about new products at that meeting.
So thank you very much, Dr. Stahl, for your presentation. Also very interesting. All presentations are very interesting, I think, like recorder. And last but not least, I want to give the floor to Professor Ana Maria Seto, Mexican professor of physics from the National Autonomous University of Mexico and former deputy executive director of the International Atomic Energy Agency, representing the International Year of Light Steering Committee. Professor Seto, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency, and thank you all for being here and listening to us. As you can see, we are really excited, and we hope to convey some of our excitement to you. I hope we are managing. Of course, as has been said before, light is not just about science and technology. It's much more than that. It's about nature, it's about culture. And here on this slide, you can see, for instance, some of the applications in the area of cultural heritage, which is also an area that has been very much supported by UNESCO. UNESCO has strong programs in cultural heritage. And there are many other applications besides the one you see here. But, for instance, we can talk about smart lighting, and now with the modern technologies, it is possible to make progress in smart lighting and to avoid some of the light pollution that is now creating problems already, not only to the old, to the ancient buildings, but also, for instance, to astronomers. They are complaining about this too much light in the sky that does not allow to see the stars. No, not just the astronomers, but all people. We all suffer from that. No? We don't see the Milky Way anymore, for instance, no? in the cities. So there are very important applications in the realm of cultural heritage because the various electromagnetic waves, the various lights in the spectrum allow us to, for instance, look at what is underneath the paintings and in the inside of the works of art and how they were made, what's the history of it, of them, and also how they can be repaired, restored, and kept. You know? So you have other applications like the ones in the lower images. The last one is an imaging made with laser of an archaeological site in Mexico that allows one to see what is where the buildings are without having to do excavations. that's very much the same idea as is being used also with all these applications, this remote sensing that is also done with light from various parts of the spectrum in order to find out what is not only on the surface but also underneath it. The next slide shows another aspect of light that is very important, and that has to do with light and art. Not only visual art, but also the performing arts have been revolutionized by light technologies lately and by lighting technologies. The visual arts, of course, the history of visual arts, of painting, sculpture, etc., is very much linked to light and to color, you know, to the various pigments, to the various lighting sources, etc. And architecture. Architecture always has had a dialogue with light. The history of architecture is very much the history of this dialogue. One particular example of what can how artists can interact with light is this nice postcard, of which we have also brought a few samples if you want to take one with you. And this is the product of a spontaneous group of art and design students in Germany when they heard about this UNESCO decision to support the International Year of Light initiative. They came together, they looked for some advice from a scientist, from a professor of science, and they made this collection of posters for the occasion. No? And you can see the diversity there, the richness. No? And if you can imagine, if this is done across the world, no, across cultures, across natures, then, nations, then we will have a much richer even collection of works of art and design. There is much more to light also beyond art. This International Year of Light is also very much a cultural project, because light has to do in general with the history of culture. It has influenced in a central way our way of thinking, you know, our philosophies. You can see also in the literature, in the poetry, etc. So this makes of this International Year of Light initiative something that is very cross and multidisciplinary. So science and technology are at the base. Industry is very important, but we also have the cultural aspects. One example of an international undertaking is, for instance, this virtual museum on light that has been mentioned on one of the slides. No? This is one way, one effort of coordination of partners that have been working so far in an isolated way, and we bring them together to do something that will, of course, be much larger than simply the sum of all these efforts. So to conclude, I think we don't have to again repeat my colleagues have given you very compelling arguments about why light and optics, also why an International Year of Light, and certainly we think that it has a very good prospects of being supported at all levels, just from the experience we have had so far when we have mentioned this initiative in various environments. There has always been a very strong, very stimulating response. We see that there is a lot of enthusiasm among people, not just scientific and technical, but also among other kinds of institutions, NGOs as well, want to collaborate, and this is one proof of this enthusiasm of people. So this is all, and we are open to your questions, and that's why we don't want to take longer. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Shetto, and of course we are open to your comments and questions. Feel open to make any comment or any question. This is a very informal setting, and we have the very, very good opportunity to take advantage of this very high level panel that we already presented. The floor is open.
I'm Pavlina Mishikova from UNESCO. At the moment, I think this is a very beautiful initiative, which has lots of potential for many other activities. I understand that this is a specific initiative, and I very much like the complex of the areas which you are targeting. My question could be a little bit challenging, because I see there is one potential area which use the light so much, and this is the spirituality. Do you feel that even if you speak about the scientific initiative, is there any space to target also this particular issue?
I don't know. Dr. Dulé.
I think that if it's a challenging question. I think if we change the word spiritual to philosophy, I'd be very happy to say we'd love to work with philosophers in exploring the philosophical and metaphysical aspects of light. The diversity of the themes are open to this. There's no area which involves light, I think, is excluded whatsoever. I think you'd have difficulty persuading scientists to get involved in promoting it, but I think it would be fascinating to organise debates between scientists and others to really have confrontational arguments and maybe find some common ground. So I think that would be a very interesting aspect.
What I'd like to say is that, as Dr. Johnson's presentation showed, it was Dr. Dudley's presentation with the organizational structure. While there is a high-level umbrella organization, at the lower levels, there's a lot of autonomy. And so just as these art students did something spontaneously on their own, I think it's that there's perfectly appropriate for other groups to spontaneously. And if there's an International Year of Light and a spiritual person wishes to do a sermon in a church or a mosque or a temple or more power to them. I welcome any illumination, and I use that word deliberately, on the value of light in the role of the evolution of human society. I mean, let's go look at the Greek philosophers and ex nihilists. Let's look at the Bible and let there be light. I mean, it's the interrelationship of humanity and its understanding of what is our what is light and how it affects us has. So I think that the structure and the organization, the global partners, anybody can participate.
Dr. Cheto.
Because it's such an important question, and it's not the first time I hear it, so I'm very glad that you raised it. I would like to compliment what my colleagues have said, because, I mentioned light has influenced our thinking across history, no? That's a fact. And what we call our Weltanschauung, the Cosmovision, no? It is very important not to just remain in the scientific and technological part, which is the basis of this initiative, but through the, and you can see it there, no? Through the national committees, of course, this diversity will show up. In Mexico, for instance, we are already thinking of, we're planning the setting up of a national committee, just waiting for the resolution to be taken by the UN, of course, but we are getting prepared for it. And Certainly in this national committee, you can think of the representatives of these various sectors that you would like to see involved in the activities that will take place as of next year already. We don't have to wait until 2015. And the dialogue across cultures and across disciplines is, of course, very welcome. No? Light is inclusive, and it is cross-cutting. That's the beauty of it.
Thank you. Yes, Dr. Young.
We believe that the first event in the universe involved light, and that is the Big Bang. And the background radiation was discovered, and I think it was mentioned in one of the slides by Penzias and Wilson, as microwave background radiation, the remnants of the first, basically the beginning of our universe. And so this is something that could be open for discussion as well. But again, it involved light. Microwaves are light as well.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Ambassador, for organizing this briefing, which, talking just personally, put me back where I was a long time ago when I was working with the Maxwell's equations, and I was trying to figure out why the 3 degrees background radiation was 3 degrees and not less and not more. And also when I joined the United Nations, then with Professor Ayensu and the help of the United Nations and Abdul Salam in Trieste, we were trying to put together the International Academy of Sciences. So, you know, thank you for the memories, that beautiful memories that you have brought back. Now, on the issue of the international year, you have given us a beautiful panoramic of what light is all about and what does it mean in terms of our real life. I have just a suggestion. I do not disagree with any of what you have said. And in fact, I do agree, and I thank you for being very imaginative in trying to pull out the tremendously practical applications in our everyday life that the photons and the lights and the electromagnetic waves have for the betterment of our life. My suggestion would be only to insist, perhaps, in order to promote the concept, because the concept is let's promote collaboration in science. And I think that that's what this international year would mean, among other things. Perhaps to insist a little bit more about those particular applications that are very crucial, even though we don't realize it, perhaps, but are very crucial with the challenges of today. I just came from a briefing that will continue this afternoon. I mean, an event that talks about the nexus between energy and water. And light is part of this nexus. You know, I think that it might be interesting to perhaps to emphasize a bit more what light and energy have to do together. We're talking about renewable energies, the sun, you know, and which is something which is very relevant in those challenges that we are discussing now, in terms of the biological processes and the food chain. You know, what is the importance of light in the food chain that we are hoping climate change is not going to disrupt too much in the nearest future, et cetera, et cetera. So my suggestion would be anchor the practical application of the meaning of an international year of light with the most pressing and crucial problems that we do have at this moment that have to do with the survival of the planet. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much. As a product of a developing country and also one that is accustomed to the use of the high technologies of the most developed type in my particular profession. I'm a neurosurgeon, but it is often said that the best technology for developing countries is that of the most developed countries, because in the end, over time, long-term speaking manner, it is the least expensive in reality, and especially if one takes into account the humanitarian aspect, the people who die of malaria, who die of whatever it is, and yet the technology exists for those things. Surgery, for example, with laser, is much less destructive on the brain than, say, with a scalpel or a knife. However, the problem is more complex than that, it seems to me. One of them, there are cultural modifications that are difficult to modify in terms of how people see what you are introducing. So my question is, are there methods or are there possibilities of creating methodologies that will allow these technologies to be accepted as part of everyday life? And the last part is availability of instruction for those developing countries, and of course the overarching problem of funding of those instructions. I just wondered if there are any thoughts on those issues.
Thank you very much. Before I take in another comment, I give back to the panel to be more interactive. If you can.
Thank you for that very interesting question. I'll just respond to this, to the last question. In terms of the funding for the training, what we really want to do, and this was a point which wasn't quite stressed right at the end, is one of the great opportunities I think we have is the last point on the slide. Because we are in this not quite unique but very special position where we're so close to industry, we have a very strong possibility, and I would almost say an obligation, to improve the role played by industry in this international outreach and training. So at the end of 2015, we would really like to have put in place new schemes to support exactly the kind of educational programs that you were referring to. I think we have the possibility to create, to identify new sources of finance. It would be nice to create money, but that's harder. But we can identify unexploited and underexploited sources that can support these activities. Concerning the first question about the choice of technology, I would leave that up to Dr. Johnson and Chembo because they have far more experience.
Well, let me say that there have been some international conferences that have been organized and run on the continent, and I recall one in particular at Cape Coast in Ghana, in which we're using optical techniques in biophysics, and that was a conference that indeed was international in scope. We had participants from the developed and the developing world discussing technologies that could possibly be transported. So we need to do more of that, of organizing conferences in the developing world. And I believe the organizations are more than willing to support that. There are fellowships that the various optical societies have that will support scientists and students to go and actually give presentations. And supported by the various optical societies. So we think that there is a mechanism, but we need to do more. And I think this is why the International Year of Light, if we could actually get more coordinated, we could do much more as opposed to individual groups. So that's why this is very important.
Joseph Richard, on the same line, Professor Kouamou has told us that it is a priority for many African governments to encourage science research, better teaching of science. What in your private opinion, Professor, what should be the priorities of the UN when we contribute to those African priorities? Do you think it's a question of capacity building, of financing, of access to technologies? Where should the focus be of the UN, all UN actors?
Easiest solution will be to say all of the above, but if I have to make a pick, I will say the is networking, to put people together so that the very few resources that the countries have, you don't have like dual occupations and, you know, people doing the same things while actually they can do a better sharing of the workload. So I think networking is very important, and in that regard, having an event like the International Year of Light is something that will enable all the relevant partners in Africa to sit down and know more or less what they can do. So I would say networking is number one. Financing, of course, is also important, but I think that I would say networking first. And if you allow me, I would just like to say two comments relatively to our speakers. I will start with the lady. I totally agree with you. Generally, people think that you cannot introduce complex concepts to people. As far as I remember, you remember that story of the neutrinos that were going faster than light. I've never experienced such an excitement in people, like the media, normal people about it. Everybody was Googling what was relativity, what was a neutrino. So I think that we can take the opportunity of this International Year of Light, of course, to emphasize all those things that we've been talking about, but also extremely complex things. I think that that will be the perfect time for people to have an overview of what light is, what are the challenges, even scientific challenges about it. Sometimes us scientists were afraid to tell to people that we still live in a world where we don't have all the answers to the questions. And this is what people look for now. They want excitement. They want to know that there are difficult problems that we are trying to tackle. And I think that 2015 can be a great opportunity for that. And, sir, of course, I'm African, and all the points you've raised, I totally agree with you. I think that people will adopt the technology when they will see that it works. If I take, for example, the example of purifying water with the UV lamp, if you bring that to a village and people see that actually it can purify a lamp and that 5 years after it still works, that it doesn't need, you know, heavy maintenance, I think that they will adopt it. But it's a very critical point that in the African Physical Society we'll always stress, that developing countries in general and African countries in particular need a particular kind of technology. It's not the same. The environment is different. People have a different level of education. The environment is different, so we need very, very compact and robust solutions. So I think that if it works, people will adopt it. Thank you.
Thank you. Another question.
I'm Jocelyn from the Church Mission. I'm the counselor for science, technology, and innovation affairs. So first, thanks to the Premier Mission of Mexico and the UNESCO to organize this briefing, and also thanks to the Excellent American to hold this briefing. And I got a lot of the informative information from the presentations and also from the discussions, so thanks a lot. Two questions. One is that as a member state, how does China to participate or support these activities? That you see that if you need some to organize some activity in China, or you need some person to join some, I believe this proposal is, and the plan is very good, you see. And if you need some help or need some the information, you could contact me, okay? That's the first question. The second is that is it possible, or are you also planning to give the proposal during the next session of the General Assembly to adopt a resolution to support the light year of the 2015 or not? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. So I give the floor to another comment.
Wanstein, and I represent Universal Esperanto Association. At first, I thought my question was very imaginative, but then the doctor, the neurosurgeon, I think it's related. The founder of the Esperanto movement was an eye doctor, and both in surgery, laser surgery, I think light could be used to help the blind, and I was wondering how the blind could be part of the International Year of the Light. I think there's also sensors that maybe people will start, visually handicapped people will be able to wear that will allow them to walk in the streets. I vaguely recall technology of that sort. So I'd like to see the blind. And I will say that I'm here, as Philip Kordelka knows me, for several years. I'm here for several years. I've seen around three or four blind people in the United Nations in the 4 years, that a total of three or four blind people. So I think they're very underrepresented at the United Nations. And if you were to come to a world conference of several thousand Esperanto speakers, you would see about 100 of the 2,000 participants being severely blind or handicapped. So our movement has attracted the blind to it, partially because the founder was an eye doctor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't know if someone from the panel wants to answer the questions before the other comments. Yes, Dr. Dudley.
I can answer two questions very simply. In terms of the participation of China, we're delighted to have several major Chinese partners in the project. The Chinese Physical Society, which is the Association of Chinese Physicists and Physics Students, and also the Chinese Optical Society, which is a particular learning society focusing on light and light technologies. And so the structures within China and within Asia in general are starting to form to promote the International Year of Light. In the same way, the activities with regard to blindness are something which we take to heart for many reasons. The concept of vision is extremely important in optical technologies, and we're all of us wearing some kind of corrective device on our eyes these days, and if we're not, we soon will be. And we have one organization in particular in the consortium, which is the CIE partner that has a special program on vision and photonic technologies to improve vision. Now, in certain cases of blindness that are pathological, you can raise awareness, but you can't solve the problem. But there are many cases where we as scientists don't understand that the problems even exist. And one of the important things that we see with an International Year of Light is to change the perception of scientists just working in their own ivory towers and worlds and listening to the needs of different sectors of the community, because it's only by listening that we'll understand what the problems are. And maybe we won't find a solution, but we may know someone who can. And this idea is extremely important. And the idea of coupling vision with the absence of vision is a beautiful one. As a way of trying to promote awareness of the problem and to ensure that where solutions exist, that they're followed up. Concerning the administrative question about the session of the assembly, I have no expertise whatsoever. So I just...
I don't know. Yes, Dr. Shetto.
I'd like to add to what Professor Dudley just said about how member state, China in particular, can participate. Of course, we would like to see that in each one of the member states, a national committee is set up. And that's up to you how you set it up. No? And I'm sure that China will be a very, very active partner in this initiative. There is no doubt. And I thank you very much. Actually, for stating your view on this, that the proposal is very good, because this gives us also more strength to go ahead with it. About the blind part of it, I think it is very important. We have the experience. We have a museum on light, and we work with blind people. they are very much interested in light, and how they sense light not through the eyes. That's one important thing. So we have to work with them, indeed. In fact, we have to work with everybody to raise awareness of what it means to be able to see or not to see. You know? Light and darkness or absence of light is important for everybody to appreciate. There is indeed some technology being developed to transform or transduce information carried by light through other means, for instance, through sound, so that the blind people can interpret it in terms of images in their minds. No? So that is, I think, another aspect that should be part of this thinking of people who do not have the benefit of having their own eyes. No?
It's. I have this. I think I've actually seen some technical papers at our conferences on some experimentation of eye implants with a CCD detector. I mean, so you know, the an artificial eye may not be that far into the future before.
You're right, Phil. I believe there's a group at the University of Rochester that is working on these eye implants using CCD technology. So they are working on it.
In relation with the question, how are we going to proceed with the resolution and initiative here in the UN, our idea of main co-sponsors of the initiative in UNESCO is to present a draft proposal to the ECOSOC. That is the way we usually do it when we propose years, and take the advantage also that the high-level meeting of the ECOSOC this year is going to be dedicated to science and technology. It will be very good context to do that. And then if already agreeable to the ECOSOC, we have to take it to the General Assembly, but this is coming from the ECOSOC. I don't see a lot of trouble or problems to get it to the General Assembly. And to do it in this session, to have a very good preparation for the year 2015. So we are on that track right now, and we are making just a consultation. We are starting a process of consultations between co-sponsors, and there, of course, we are going to open consultations with everybody. I feel very comfortable right now because I see that I want to congratulate the panel for the hard work they already done. We have a lot of work prepared, and I feel that as diplomats, we feel really comfortable, and we hope to be at the level of the work that you have done, and the preparation that you have done is very impressive. Yes.
Good afternoon. I'm from the European Union delegation, but we haven't talked about it yet on the text or anything, so I speak more on my personal behalf also because I'm originally a scientist who ended up in the diplomatic scene here by complete chance. So I'm very happy to see this kind of briefing since it's very inspiring. We're not very used to see this in the UN. We are in a very much more political setting, dealing with the second committee. So we talk a lot about environment, development, and there might be links there. But my first question is, what is the added value? What do you expect from the GA to do that you cannot do with the year in the context of UNESCO? Because I see that it has been agreed by the board. You already have a steering committee, you already have an advisory board, you already have an international secretariat. So what is it that you expect from the GA to do that you wouldn't be able to do? What's the next step? Because also from here we make links. I mean, you know, what's the links with maybe also what's happening in 2015? There's a lot of things happening in the UN. Is there a link? Are there other actually issues important in 2015 that would deserve an international year? Has this been thought at some point in UNESCO? You know, what are those different links? That'd be really good to hear. Thank you.
The in terms of other aspects in UNESCO, I can't speak to that question, but in terms of the general issue of the added value, I'd first like to just say that we have a steering committee. We don't have an international secretariat. The plan is to have one. So all these, the offers have been made by lots of partners, but nothing has been consolidated in a firm structure yet, because we need the legitimacy and the authority of the General Assembly to actually force us to work together, because we have engineers and chemists and biologists and partners with tens of millions of euros budget, and to try to get them to work together on something is extraordinarily difficult. And I believe UNESCO is a powerful facilitating agency, but maybe I'm saying something which is terrible here, but from my point of view, it doesn't have the authority of the General Assembly, and it doesn't speak with that voice. The building in Paris is a small building, and the building in New York is a big building. It's a different, it seems to me, a different order of magnitude, a different scale of international power from the General Assembly, and I think it's the only way that we're really going to achieve these goals. The world has been revolutionized in 50 years since the invention of the transistor, and we all benefit from that now, because research was carried out in a coordinated way after the end of Second World War because of the structures in place from the Manhattan Project. And that was forced upon the structures by governments, by big government. And I think we need the same external pressure on us to work together. And on an international level, the only organization that can do that, I think, is the United Nations. So that's my take on that question.
Just a very quick word, because I think there is another meeting starting. So, but thank you for your question. And indeed, the UN family is a family with various bodies. UNESCO has a strong focus on education, culture, science, and free media, training of journalists. Having the General Assembly endorsing some of our programs is an immense political push. It's also helped, like my colleagues were saying, the one UN, people to work together. For instance, on education, you've got five or six UN bodies working on education, the World Bank, UNDP, UNICEF, UNESCO, UNFPA. Having the Secretary General launching an education initiative last September has been an immense political success. It's not a GA resolution. It's Mr. Ban Ki-moon himself launching an initiative. Has been an immense political push. On culture for development, heritage and creative industries for development, we are organizing today and tomorrow with the People's Republic of China in Hangzhou a World Congress on Culture for Development. There have been two GA resolutions on that, and it is also an immense tool to raise awareness and to improve the way the system works better together. And in science for development, in particular, in this case, light, but there are other scientific fields, it is indeed important that the system, that all of us can work together. It is important that we together try to raise the public attention, the awareness of the public opinion on that. And this is, of course, done best when all the UN system can cooperate together. And having the GA or the Secretary General behind such an initiative is an immense incitant, an immense encouragement to work in that direction.
Well, regrettably, we don't have much time if we wanted, but this is the case. So thank you very much, everybody, for coming. And we keep in contact about this initiative that I feel that is going to be very important for the UN. Thank you.